And now, it's your turn with Dave Malarkey. 724-283-2525. It's Butler County's only live call-in talk show. It's your turn on 680 AM WISR and worldwide on the internet at WISR680.com. It's your turn, 724-283-2525. And now, it's your turn with Dave Malarkey.
Interesting program coming up for you today on the Friday edition of It's Your Turn. We're going to be talking in just a moment or so about a film festival that's going to be screening in the Pittsburgh area this weekend, Wild and Scenic Film Festival. Also today we'll be chatting about summer travel trends with Phil Sylvester. That's going to be a long-distance conversation. Really, Phil Sylvester is in Australia, so we'll be talking... He won't be here in the studio. We'll be talking with him by telephone from Australia. And also we'll chat later on the program today with Stephen Waldman, who contends that America is in danger of losing its freedom of religion. They're part of the Bill of Rights. So all of that coming up on the Friday edition of It's Your Turn. Miller's Shoes, 215 South Main Street in downtown Butler, where families have been shopping for value and quality for over 100 years. In fact, 126 years to be exact. Yes, they're celebrating their 126th anniversary. Miller's Shoes, headquarters locally for SAS Comfort Shoes. And if you've never tried on a pair of SAS shoes, they really are comfortable. They're like slippers. They also make sandals. SAS Comfort Sandals, in a variety of colors and styles, and they're just as comfortable as their shoes. Try a pair on at Miller's Shoes, SAS Sandals for summertime. Tennis shoes, of course, for everybody in the family. They've got all the famous name brands there at Miller's under one roof. Whether you like Nike or New Balance or Saucony or Rockport or Keds or Skechers or Easy Spirit or Asics or Pro-Pet, they got them all. Miller's Shoes, and a great selection of shoes and boots as well, including shoes on sale, on racks for easy browsing. Stop in. Say hi to Jimmy Ciprian and the rest of the Ciprian family at Miller's Shoes, 215 South Main Street in downtown Butler for 126 years.
Thinking about remodeling or refinancing your home? Armco Credit Union's new HELOC combines the flexibility of a traditional home equity line of credit with the low fixed rate of a home equity loan. Lock in different amounts, rates, and terms up to 20 years under one convenient loan agreement and monthly payment without the hassle of reapplying as your borrowing needs change. It's never been easier to join, so call or visit us at one of our locations or online at armcocu.com to become a member. Armco Credit Union is an equal housing lender and is federally insured by NCUA.
Listeners, coming up on It's Your Turn, my name is Dave Malarkey. The 5th annual Wild and Scenic Film Festival takes place this weekend, and we're going to talk about that with Stacy Albin, who is the Environmental Program Coordinator for the Pennsylvania Resources Council. She joins us by telephone today. Stacy, nice to talk with you. Nice to have you with us here.
Hi, thank you.
This annual film festival, it's just one day, right? And it's this weekend, am I correct on that?
Yes, it is. One day, a Saturday evening, a nice way to spend your Saturday night at Pittsburgh Playhouse.
What time does it get underway Saturday?
Doors open at 6 o'clock, so we will start with several nonprofits that you can interact with that relate to some of the films that we are showing. So we want to make sure that, you know, not only are you supporting Pennsylvania Resources Council and Allegheny Cleanways directly, you know, as our annual fundraiser, but some of the nonprofits that are there will get some, hopefully, fingers crossed, some volunteers, and we'll get to interact with some of the attendees as well. And then films start at 7 o'clock.
I'm sure many of our listeners are not familiar with this, Stacy, because it's only been coming around here to our area for, well, this will be the 5th year. What exactly is the Wild and Scenic Film Festival?
Yeah, so it is a national film festival, and PRC and Allegheny Cleanways has We've been hosting it in Pittsburgh for 5 years now. You know, really their goal is to, you know, kind of connect the beauty of our earth, but also have environmental activism behind it. So, great filmography, great photography, but there's also a lot of concerns right now, and a lot of environmental issues, you know, whether it's water quality, whether it's air quality. So the goal of the film festival is to not only showcase the beauty of the earth, but also to remind everyone that we need to be protecting it as well.
Now, these are, generally speaking, short films. It's not like, you know, War and Peace or anything like that. But there,
right.
it's a whole evening of films because there's a whole bunch of them that'll be screened, right?
Right. So it is, we do have a handful of short films. So the films can run anywhere between 3 minutes to, I think our longest one is about 26 minutes. So we just want to give everyone a little taste of, you know, different topics, is the idea. This year we did want to focus the longer films on our local films. So the longest one will be Downstream, which was produced at Point Park University, mostly because it highlights one of the major issues in this region, which is water quality. So the attendees will get introduced to that and kind of get an update with what's going on.
Yeah, and there's a film by Point Park University. 12 students, I guess, traveled to Montana to film cleanup work on a river there that had been contaminated by years of copper milling. And so one of the films will show the story of that cleanup. Very nice.
That's right.
These films are, well, they're beautiful. There's a lot of great nature photography in them, but they also highlight the environmental issues that come with, you know, being a responsible citizen, keeping our waterways clean.
Mm-hmm.
Where does this film festival take place?
So the film festival this year will be at Point Park University, the new PNC Theater at the Pittsburgh Playhouse. It's absolutely beautiful. So if you haven't seen it, that alone is definitely a reason to go. And we're very excited to be working with Point Park because this will be the first film festival hosted there since it opened. So very exciting for everyone.
Yeah, we want to make sure to emphasize to people who may have somehow missed the news, Pittsburgh Playhouse used to be in Oakland. Not there anymore. In fact, they're demolishing the building, and the new location is in downtown Pittsburgh at Point Park University, and it is a beautiful, beautiful facility. Do you have any idea when the Wild and Scenic Film Festival started? I know this is only the fifth year that you're bringing it to Pittsburgh, but it's been around for a little longer than that, has it not, Tracy?
It has. I can't tell you the exact year, but I know it has been around for quite a while. It is based out west, so it's probably had a presence out there for a bit longer, you know, than over on the eastern half of the U.S.
Mm, I misspoke there, by the way. It's Stacy, not Tracy. I apologize.
That's okay.
Well, there's a lot of people that have good things to say about this. And tickets are available. Do you have to get them in advance, or can you get them at the door, Stacy? Do you know?
Yeah, you can get them in advance or at the door if you know, just decide you're walking downtown and you want to join a film festival. Absolutely. The ticketing office will be open that evening as well.
And there are festivities, including an after party at Forbes Tavern, so you might want to take that in as well.
So this year we have a couple of our sponsors. They will be sponsoring the after party, Straw Brewery and Wiggle Whiskey and Threadbear Cider. So pretty much right next door, we're going to head over to Forbes Tavern. We wanted to give attendees an opportunity to actually interact with the local filmmakers and some of the nonprofits a little bit more. We wanted them to, you know, go ahead and watch the films and then be able to actually meet the people that are, you know, leading the water quality efforts in this region, not just necessarily, you know, they get to they get to watch Superfund, for example, and then they'll be able to talk to, you know, a legal firm that's also a nonprofit that will be there, that's kind of leading the efforts in assisting, you know, folks that are affected by Superfunds or remediation or water quality issues in this region. So we really wanted to make that local connection, and I think the way to do it is over, you know, some good beer and cider tastings right next door.
We've had a lot of water pollution in decades gone by here in Pennsylvania, but there have been some pretty successful cleanup efforts, in particular with regard to mine drainage here in Pennsylvania, which turned a lot of streams a rusty red color, but much of that has been cleaned up, including, you may not be familiar with this, Stacy, but there's been considerable work in the Slippery Rock Creek watershed over the past couple of decades using passive treatment systems, and it's a lot cleaner now than it used to be. And I think we can safely say that about many streams now in western Pennsylvania, can we not?
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, you know, and again, these nonprofits are working every single day to, you know, keep that effort going. Allegheny Cleanways in particular, you know, they're physically taking trash out of our rivers to make sure that the beauty kind of shines through there. So so even their efforts are well noted, I would say.
Yeah, we have a group that's been cleaning up the Conequenessing Creek here in Butler County, and they've been Beaver County for several years now. And I mean, every summer they take out tons of tires and trash and junk from the Conequenessing Creek. It's good stuff. Hey, folks, your chance to see some beautiful films, a whole series of them. Some of them are rather short. A couple of them are a little bit longer. It's the 5th Annual Wild and Scenic Film Festival to benefit Pennsylvania Resources Council and Allegheny Cleanways. Stacy Albin, our guest, is the Environmental Program Coordinator for Pennsylvania Resources Council. By the way, before we wrap up, Stacy, what is the Pennsylvania Resources Council for our listeners who aren't familiar with the organization?
Thank you. I am so glad you asked. We are a waste diversion organization, a nonprofit based in the South Side, as well as Philadelphia. And so our efforts are mostly focusing on, you know, reduce, reuse, recycle in that order. So we want to make sure that, you know, residents have a responsible way to dispose of their electronics. The glass was just pulled from the curbside programs in many municipalities. And, you know, PRC is an organization that went directly to the glass industry and said, okay, how do we solve this problem? So now we're hosting glass pop-up events to try to, you know, keep that resource going. So really just trying to come up with solutions, waste-related solutions, and make sure that everybody's, you know, reduce, reuse, recycling.
Yeah, it's good stuff. The 5th Annual Wild and Scenic Film Festival this Saturday evening. That's June 1st. Hard to believe it's June 1st already this Saturday, but it is. It takes place at the Pittsburgh Playhouse, their new location downtown Pittsburgh. Doors open at 6. The films start at 7. Stacy Albin, our guest. Stacy, nice to talk with you today. Thanks for spending a few minutes with us here.
Thank you so much.
All right. So long now.
Bye.
The Young Funeral Home of Butler invites you to stop by their Jefferson Street location, downtown Butler, to talk about pre-arrangements. Not the easiest thing to do, but necessary. And the Young family will walk you through the process, making it very comfortable and really easy to take care of. You'll experience peace of mind knowing that your wishes and plans will be carried out to the last detail. Call the Young Funeral Home in Butler today to make an appointment with a member of the Young family. Generations of the Young family have been caring for generations of Butler families for well over 40 years. The Young Funeral Home, West Jefferson Street in Butler. Time for a checkup for your pet. We recommend Suburban Animal Clinic. Or maybe Fido or Tabby's not feeling so well. Suburban Animal Clinic, a small animal veterinary practice located Route 8 south of Butler at the intersection with Thorncrest Drive. It's about 5 miles south of Butler. Suburban Animal Clinic, in the spirit of Dr. Dennis Damon. Their services include wellness checks for your pet, of course, Also, emergency care. They have laser therapy, dental available. Also, prescription diets. You know, one of the things that are problems for a lot of our pets these days, being overweight. Microchipping, they can handle that as well. Suburban Animal Clinic, Route 8, south of Butler. If you're headed south from Butler toward Pittsburgh, as soon as you pass all the auto dealerships, start looking on your left. That's Suburban Animal Clinic, Route 8 South at Thorncrest Drive. Hey, folks, summer is almost here. Vacation time. We're going to talk a little bit about vacation trends on the next segment of It's Your Turn here on WISR. My name is Dave Malarkey. Our guest is Phil Sylvester of World Nomads, who visits with us by telephone. Phil, nice to meet you. Nice to have you with us today.
My pleasure to be here, calling you all the way from World Nomads headquarters in Sydney, Australia.
My goodness gracious, that's halfway around the world from us here in Western Pennsylvania, Phil.
And a little bit more.
Well, listen, before we talk about some summer travel trends, you're with World Nomads. Can you tell our listeners what that is? What is World Nomads?
Okay, well, we're a travel, lifestyle, and insurance brand. So we create a lot of content talking about travel, and we have a community of people who, you know, enjoy travel as much as we do. And we don't sell flights, we don't sell hotels, we don't book tours, but we do sell travel insurance. So as much as we want to encourage travel, we want people to explore and push their boundaries a little bit, but we want them to stay safe as well. So a global travel insurance company. About 1 million people we've got on our database. So,
oh, wow.
Yeah, not too small.
And Phil, listeners, has been keeping travelers safe for almost 10 years now through articles, content, and more recently as the co-host of World Nomads podcast. So let's talk a little bit about summer travel trends. One place that in particular folks from here in the United States might want to think about is Mexico. And there's a heck of a lot more to Mexico than to margaritas and mariachi, right, Phil?
Yeah, that's right. Look, I mean, it's been through a pretty terrible time in the last, you know, 15, 20 years, but things have calmed down there quite significantly, and it's probably time to have another look at Mexico, because even places which were in the news 10 years ago, you know, got a new lease of life. Tijuana, for example, is now sort of like a tech hub and is a sister city to San Diego. And if you're looking for, you know, relatively cheap holiday, there's plenty of great food there, and it's a lot safer than it used to be. But despite that, oh, there's lots and lots of places all over Mexico that have never been trouble spots, and, you know, now's a great time to go there.
And the culture, the ancient civilizations of Mexico are absolutely amazing. Listeners, if you're not familiar with that, they go back thousands and thousands of years. The ancient architecture of these civilizations from millennia ago. There are still some remnants of these, Phil. Places like, I'm trying to remember off the top of my head, Teotihuacan and Chichen Itza and some other of these places. You can still visit them, can't you?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, the near Cancun, so in the Quintana Roo province there on the Yucatan Peninsula, is the highest concentration of Mayan ruins in all of Mexico. There are, you know, you can go and meet a local and go to somebody's farm outside of town, and he might have a stack of ruins in his own backyard. They're not all, you know, just so quite so obvious. There's so much of it there as well. But, you know, great other culture everywhere as well, because it's such a big country. You know, it's very varied from the north to the south. There are all sorts of different cultures that you can get involved in there. And, of course, do you like a bit of Cuba Libre? Like a bit of wrestling for a modern-day cultural activity?
Yeah, yeah, absolutely. By the way, your publicist emailed me a copy of your travel guide for Mexico. Mexico, where nomads go. Wonderful brochure there. Is that available to the general public? Can they get that online or somewhere?
Yep, and all we need is an email, so we can send you a copy of the file as a PDF. Just go to worldnomads.com/guides, And you'll see we've got a whole range of guides there, but featured very prominently at the top is the Mexico guide. We're pretty proud of that one. That was, we contacted a lot of people who know Mexico really well, and they were able to write a lot of first-person stories about their experiences there. I think you find, I mean, you've had a read of it. I think you might find it's a little bit different from your usual guide. It's not go here, do this, do that. It's told through people's stories about their own experiences when they were there. So we're not telling you what to do, but we're showing you where other world nomads have been and trying to encourage you to go and explore it in the same way.
Mm-hmm. And it's beautiful and put together with beautiful color photographs too, worldnomads.com. Well, let's talk about some of the other travel trends other than Mexico. A lot of folks are experiencing now what they call experiential travel. Rather than collecting a lot of stuff in their homes, they say, let's go places. Let's experience things. And I guess that's becoming more and more popular, Phil.
Yeah, look, I mean, the millennial generation are the ones that have really paved the way on this one. They pretty big college debts and whatever, and they go, we're never really going to get rid of that. So instead of collecting things like the older generations have done, let's go collect some experiences. And it's a great way to travel, and a lot of people have learnt from that as well. Even their parents are now picking up the idea that, a bucket list to go and tick off some sites is one thing, but once you've seen them all, what do you do next? You go and have an adventure. You go and do something that, an adventure is relative, of course. You go and do something which is a little bit out of your comfort zone, something you would not normally do in your everyday life, and you get exhilarated and you collect these experiences.
Younger generation is also becoming more conscious of global climate change, and they're looking at ecotourism. Can you tell our listeners, Phil, what is meant by that term, ecotourism?
Yeah, well, look, it's very important to us at World Nomads because, global tourism is growing 10% year on year. There are now more people travelling the world than they ever have been at one time. And you know the old adage, leave only footprints when you go to a destination. Mm-hmm. It's really, you've seen all, places like Venice are now putting gates to stop people going in the Piazza San Marco. There's a lot of over-tourism happening, and that really has an impact on the environment. So what we'd like to encourage people to do is have a look at eco-tourism, something which is, environmentally friendly. And there are lots and lots of, and there's luxury eco-tourism. You don't have to, wear hemp clothes and open-toed sandals. There's luxury eco-tourism as well. But the whole idea is that the experience that you have while you're there leaves a lighter footprint on the earth so that it's still there for other people to enjoy in the way that you've enjoyed it as well.
Yeah, one of the things I was reading about from World Nomads, the island of Bali in the South Pacific, we know that from the Rodgers and Hammerstein Broadway musical South Pacific and the song Bali High. Bali has a population of just over 4 million people. Last year, they had 15 million visitors. Holy moly.
Yeah.
Wow.
I know. Yeah, look, Bali, it's quite close to Australia. It's kind of like our Cancun, if you know what I mean.
Mm-hmm. Right,
that Mexican
yes.
destination there. And it's a beautiful place. And the Balinese, even though it's part of Indonesia, they're sort of slightly culturally different. Most of Indonesia is Muslim, but they're Hindus on Bali. And it is really a beautiful place. But all of those tourists turning up, in that article you were reading, they've, like 60% of the water on the island gets used up to service the tourism industry. It's only a relatively small island. There's not many more opportunities for collecting water that you can do. So that's the kind of thing that we're talking about in ecotourism. You should, make sure that the resort that you're going to are sensible about the way they use and recycle the water that they already have.
For many, many years, many decades actually, on many trips and tours, there's been something called a single supplement, where someone who's traveling by themselves has to pay extra. You at World Nomads don't think that's a good idea. In fact, you've been trying to get rid of that single supplement, have you not?
Yeah, we have. Look, we joined with another organization, another blog called the Solo Traveler, blog, and we helped by funding and encouraging the Solo Travel Awards, where we recognised and rewarded companies that were getting rid of that solo stuff. You know, I don't know if you've ever been stung by it, but I mean, I heard one case, there was a woman trying to go on a trip, and the single, she would have been better off buying two tickets and having an empty bed on the cruise next to her, rather than paying, it was cheaper than the single supplement. It just makes no sense. And there's lots of reasons to travel solo these days, you know, not necessarily because you're on your own anymore. We all have busy lives, and, you know, a couple may have separate interests, and, you know, people have the wherewithal these days to go, well, you stay here this week, honey. I'm going to go and do my thing on this trip. I'm going to, you know, whatever you're into, aeroplanes, mountain climbing, cruising, whatever it is. And then the next vacation that comes around, the other partner will go, no, it's my turn, honey. I'm going to go do my thing. Mm-hmm. So, you know, it's not an overall lifestyle, but there is this fantastic trend where people can say, well, yeah, and it's kind of linked to that experiential travel as well. It's like, I want to go do my thing. You're not interested in it? No problem. I'm going to go on my own.
Absolutely. Well, I've not been stung by the single supplement. I'm familiar with it. I know what it is. But I tend to do my traveling solo and independently, as opposed to, you know, taking tours. I like to do a lot of research and then go out on my own. I also tend to stay away from the really ritzy, pricey hotels, since all I'm going to do is sleep there anyway. in the dark, I'd rather spend my money, on a museum in Paris or some other attraction or event rather than a really ritzy hotel. I've stayed in some wonderful, very, very inexpensive hotels right next to the train stations in Paris, and it works just fine. Works just fine.
Yeah, you know, and, you know, we all know about Airbnb and those, you know, accommodation sharing sites. But another growing sort of trend that we've noticed as well is in homestay. So you can actually, it can sound a little bit uncomfortable, but, you know, these places are set up where you can get your own room and your own facilities. But you have an interaction with the people from the country as well. You make this local connection with people. And, of course, you learn so much more about a place. If you're having a chat with the local, especially, you know, it's not just somebody bumping in the street, you're actually spending some of the time, you know, having a meal, relaxing after a day's sightseeing, and you can learn so much more about a place. And they're really inexpensive as well.
Our time begins to run short. I wanted to ask you about one other thing that travelers need to be wary of, Phil Sylvester. Over tourism and dark travel. Could you talk about those for a second?
Yeah, over-tourism, as I was saying, you know, tourism numbers, never more people travelling. A lot more countries, Brazil, India, China, with a growing, booming middle class. So, there are a lot more people out there. And there's nothing wrong with tourism numbers growing. The problem is when everybody wants to do the same thing in the same way at the same time. So, you know, if you... the manager of the Americas that I work with, Christina, she said to me one day, look, if you like crusty bread, wine and cheese, basically any village in France will do for you. So, you know, does it have to be this particular village because you saw it in a movie or read about it in a book? The same experiences are to be had elsewhere. And dark tourism, look, you may have, I'm sure you saw it in the news, some people, and there's nothing wrong with going and visiting, you know, for example, a former Nazi concentration camp and hearing the stories there and learning a little bit about the history. But, you know, just be a bit careful about taking the selfie when you're there. You've just got to have it. It's okay to go and have this dark side of tourism as long as it's educational, but, you know, you've got to show some respect.
Good point. Folks, if you want to learn more, check out this website. Can you give us that web address again, Phil Sylvester?
Yes, sir. worldnomads.com. You'll find everything you need right there. You can get our guides from there. You can get our travel advice. If you're a keen amateur photographer, you can join one of our photography scholarships. If you can win yourself a money can't buy a free trip somewhere. And, of course, we've got our travel insurance on the site as well.
WorldNomads.com. I still can't believe, Phil, that I'm talking to you in Australia. It sounds like you're in the next room, for goodness sakes. What a miracle, huh?
I know. And I'm actually in my pajamas as well, so sorry about that.
Thank you, Phil Sylvester. Nice to talk with you today. Thanks for being with
us. You too, Dave.
Okay, so long.
Thanks, mate. Bye.
Do you have missing teeth or wear dentures? You may have heard of or are considering dental implants. Hi, this is Dr. Bob Todd of Butler Smiles Dental Care. There are many options available with dental implants, and making the right choice can be confusing. I have been placing dental implants since 2004, both full-size traditional implants and small diameter or mini dental implants. There are indications for both, but more and more we are using mini dental implants in a variety of innovative ways. They are easier to place, causing less discomfort, are less costly, and can frequently be used immediately after placement, allowing you to get back to eating the foods you like or smiling again right away. Traditional implants typically have a 4-month healing time before they can be used. I invite you to call our office at 282-7774 to schedule a free consultation to see if mini dental implants are the right solution for your dental problems, or visit us on the web at butlersmiles.com.
Butler Health System is a top 100 hospital for getting Doug back to playing with his grandkids and managing his farm.
For ensuring that Craig made it to his daughter's college graduation.
For helping Ray travel to Europe to visit his family.
At Butler Health System, we know what it takes to provide nationally recognized care. But more importantly, we know why we have to.
Caring hands, remarkable minds. That's Butler Health System.
Coming up on the next segment of It's Your Turn here on WISR, my name is Dave Malarkey. We're going to be chatting with Stephen Waldman, author of a new book entitled Sacred Liberty, America's Long, Bloody, and Ongoing Struggle for Religious Freedom. Stephen Waldman, nice to meet you. Nice to have you with us for a few minutes here on the program today, sir.
I appreciate you having me. Thank you.
Well, when we talk about religious liberty, I think most Americans kind of figure that, we've had that forever. America always religious, always have religious freedom, Steve?
Well, no. That's one of the conclusions of this book, and somewhat surprisingly for me. Really, we haven't had robust religious freedom for most of our history. We are, in fact, taught that the land was settled by people seeking religious freedom, but they really weren't seeking religious freedom. They were seeking protection for themselves. And the difference is religious freedom is something that you are willing to apply to other people too. So you had the Puritans who were harassed in England and then come over and start hanging Quakers from trees in Boston Common for the crime of being a Quaker. So, and that was really the history for the first 150 years. Not always that brutal, but it was basically a situation where the colonies were adopting the European model of picking a religion to have the state favor that religion. Taxing its citizens to help pay for the salaries of the ministers of one religion. And it took a long time and a lot of really kind of sometimes bloody struggle to get to what we have now, which is, in fact, quite a robust model of religious freedom.
It is kind of ironic because we all learned in our history classes way back, even in elementary school, about the Pilgrims and the Puritans and the Separatists who came to America seeking religious freedom. But for the most part, it was just for their particular brand of religion, right?
Yeah, exactly. And it was very hard for people to get, kind of accept the idea that if you found what you believe is the true faith, that you should be tolerant of other faiths that are wrong. It almost felt like, I think, to people like they were abandoning God or betraying their faith to not do it. So it was, we take it for granted now, but the ideas that, James Madison and others started to really push around the time of the Constitution were pretty revolutionary, and Madison in particular, like, the key to his philosophy was that the best way to encourage religion is to leave it alone. And we kind of have absorbed that and take it for granted, but it was very radical at the time. You know, you usually, at that point, people thought, you want to help religion? The government should get in there and help religion, and, you know, using its taxing power and preferences. So that was a big shift, not just in America, but really in world history. It just hadn't happened much. And now, that wasn't the end of the story either, because the First Amendment only applied to the federal government, not to the states. So there was still plenty of kind of persecution and regulation on the state and local level for a long time, and it resulted in real serious harassment and persecution of Catholics and Mormons and Jehovah's Witnesses and other groups throughout American history.
Was it because, we're talking with Stephen Waldman, author of Sacred Liberty, was it because, for example, in the New England colonies, Massachusetts and so on, that the Puritans and the Pilgrims were so discriminatory other than their own religion? Is that why we had colonies like, well, Pennsylvania, for example, where I am right now, William Penn, you know, that was a Quaker colony. Maryland was very much a Catholic colony. Is that why that happened, Steve?
Yeah, and one advantage that America had over Europe is land. You know, we had extra land, so in some cases when people were persecuted, they could go off somewhere else and start a new approach. And Pennsylvania was really very important in the whole story, because what I was saying before of the first 150 years were mostly failed experiments in religious regulation. One important exception was Pennsylvania and Philadelphia. You know, James Madison had real Philadelphia envy. He thought that they had it worked out. They had religious freedom and pluralism, and he also connected it. He thought, you know, they also seemed to have a lot of economic vitality and businesses and libraries, culture, and he thought it was all connected. Even Pennsylvania, though, kind of gave a little cautionary tale of how hard it is to get it right when you have a kind of religiously based government. During the period when the Quakers were really in control of the legislature, and this is obviously a group that had been persecuted themselves and were very sensitive to religious freedom, but they also had religious views, specifically pacifism, that were getting in the way of governing. And they it kind of came to a head when there was a massacre in the western part of the state, and the people brought they were massacred by Indians, and they brought the charred dead bodies of the children and family members who were killed up to the state house in Philadelphia, and basically forced the Quakers to drop their pacifist policy on the Western Front. So it was kind of a little cautionary tale that even if you're well-intended and sensitive to religious minorities, having a one religion run a state is problematic.
I'm interested in your discussion in your book, Stephen, of James Madison. I'm trying to remember my sequence of presidents here. Washington, John Adams, Jefferson, and then Madison was the fourth president, right? Am I remembering that correctly?
Yes, that's right. Though I was at a Disney World exhibit once the other day with my kids, and they had these paintings up on the wall of the early presidents, and they had Washington, Adams, Jefferson, and then James Monroe. And it's like, wait a second, there's something missing in here. They skipped James Madison, who happened to have, you know, written the Constitution and the Bill of Rights. Like, what's a guy got to do to get some respect at Disney World? But he was, in the story of religious freedom, he really was the most important of the founding fathers, more so even than Thomas Jefferson, because he really was the one who forged a coalition around religious freedom that pulled together people like Jefferson, who were these sort of Enlightenment people who were actually pretty anti-religion, and evangelical Christians, or Baptists, but what we now call evangelical Christians, who wanted religious freedom for different reasons. And Madison pulled them all together in this approach that, you know, that pulled the government out of regulating or even helping religion. That was the other thing. It's like, it wasn't just a matter of, hey, we shouldn't persecute people. Madison believed that the state shouldn't help religions either. There was this, you know, he was really very influenced by what was happening in his own backyard. He was in Virginia, and as a young man, there was this wave of persecution against Baptists. Just horrifying stuff. I mean, and this is right on the eve of the American Revolution. About half the Baptist ministers had been arrested. And they would, you know, a preacher would be up preaching, and someone would come in, just take the butt end of a whip and shove it in his mouth, drag him out to the outside and beat him up, or throw hornet's nests into the services. It was really brutal. And so Madison didn't have to learn about religious persecution, you know, reading books about Europe. He was hearing about it and seeing it in his own backyard. And it led him to this approach that was very opposed to the government, you know, favoring one religion or another. That was the first part of it. But he also, as I said, didn't like the ideas of the government helping religion either. And this was very much influenced by the Baptists. They thought it would backfire, that it would make religions lazy and corrupt, and make regular people think that it's, you know, a religion is sort of a trick of the state. Mm-hmm. So he had a kind of free market attitude that the religions should be on their own and that they will be better for it.
I don't know how old James Madison was when he was elected president. He was the fourth president. Was he old enough to have been involved in the writing of the Constitution some decades earlier, or no?
Yes, he was a key figure in the writing of the Constitution and in the writing of the Bill of Rights, the First Amendment, which is so important for the you know, the story of religious freedom. So he was really kind of, I don't know if you remember that movie Zelig, where the character sort of, I'm dating myself, I suppose, was sort of present throughout history. Madison finds himself in a lot of these key areas about religious freedom, including the writing of the Constitution and the Bill of Rights.
We're chatting with Stephen Waldman, author of a new book entitled Sacred Liberty, America's Long, Bloody, Ongoing Struggle for Religious Freedom. Stephen argues that there have been other presidents down through the years who have been staunch pushers for religious freedom. We'll talk about that when we come back in just a moment. A quick break. More on It's Your Turn here on WISR right after these words.
Planning ahead is simple. Planning at the last minute is hard and emotionally frustrating. And planning a funeral at the last minute during an anguishing time of your life is an unnecessary personal burden. Thompson Miller Funeral Home in Butler suggests that you pre-plan the funeral. Make all the choices now while you're still emotionally stable. The funeral service, the choice of caskets, which minister, priest, or rabbi, cremation, visitations, flowers, church service or not, all of these decisions must be made. Make them now before the emotions set in. Pre-plan with Thompson Miller. Think about it. Then call us to meet with you and to discuss it privately. Call 724-287-3706. 287-3706. Pre-arrangement. It really makes sense. Thompson Miller Funeral Home at the corner of East North and McCain Streets in downtown Butler. Thompson Miller. Time-honored excellence.
Thinking about remodeling or refinancing your home? ARMCO Credit Union's new HELOC combines the flexibility of a traditional home equity line of credit with the low fixed rate of a home equity loan. Lock in different amounts, rates, and terms up to 20 years under one convenient loan agreement and monthly payment without the hassle of reapplying as your borrowing needs change. It's never been easier to join. So call or visit us at one of our locations or online at armcocu.com to become a member. ARMCO Credit Union is an equal housing lender and is federally insured by NCUA.
Welcome back. I'm Dave Malarkey. We're chatting by telephone today on this segment of It's Your Turn with Stephen Waldman, author of Sacred Liberty, America's Long, Bloody, and Ongoing Struggle for Religious Freedom. A little bit about our guest. Stephen Waldman is a journalist and entrepreneur. He was co-founder of BeliefNet, an award-winning multi-faith website. He earlier was a national editor of U.S. News and World Report and a national correspondent for Newsweek. Madison, not the only president who pushed for religious freedom. You talk about others in your book, Stephen. Who were some of those?
Well, George Washington was actually important in a different way, not so much as president, but when he was the head of the Continental Army, which, when you think about it, was sort of the first national institution we had. We had 13 separate little countries. Well, he created this national institution, the Army, and started to confront the diversity of Americans' religions. So, as you said, he had Catholics from Maryland and Quakers from Pennsylvania and things like that. And one of the first things he was appalled at was that the soldiers had a practice of burning effigies of the Pope on Guy Fawkes Day, you know, in a very, very anti-Catholic move. And Washington, meanwhile, was trying to recruit the help of France, a Catholic country. And so he said, this is appalling and stupid. We're not going to be able to win over Catholic countries, so he banned the practice of burning effigies of the Pope, and in general tried to stamp out anti-Catholic sentiment in the Continental Army. And by the way, this is a real theme in the book, is that for the first few hundred years, anti-Catholic sentiment and persecution was really important and significant, of riots and burning down convents and churches. And, you know, when the big wave of Catholic immigration came in the 1830s and 40s, it led to a big backlash against Catholics. Other presidents, the World War II presidents, Franklin Roosevelt, Harry Truman, Dwight Eisenhower, it was a real turning point, because that was sort of the moment when we as a country started to think of religious freedom as an important ideal of America that unites us. So not just religion, you know, presidents had always invoked God and God's favor in speeches and things like that. This is a little different. This is saying this approach that we have to religious freedom, where we give all different religions equality and freedom, is what separates us from Hitler and the fascists and then later the communists. So it became this moment where they elevated religious freedom to being this really sacred, very, very important part of the national character. And then one other I would mention that may come as a surprise is George W. Bush. In his posture on Islam in the days and years right after 9/11 was really important and well done, and he had a difficult task, because he had to both attack Islamic terrorism, very real threat, while defending American Muslims, and drawing that line very clearly and saying, you know, these are two different things. We need to support and defend our Muslim neighbors while attacking Islamic radicals. And that really came at a very important time. Things could have gotten very, very ugly if he hadn't done that.
Didn't Barack Obama also speak strongly in defense of Islam?
Yes, he did. And I think you know, by this time, I think there was the two of them coming back to back had a real consensus around drawing that line and making sure that we're not demonizing American Muslims while we're attacking Muslim terrorists.
What about today? Here in western Pennsylvania, we had a horrific accident horrific incident last year where many people were murdered in a synagogue in Pittsburgh. I'm sure you're familiar with that, Steve.
Yes, and it's, you know, it was a real reminder. The fact that the worst, you know, massacre of Jews in American history didn't happen in, you know, 1818 or 1918, but in 2018, was really alarming and a wake-up call that, you know, when you're talking about religious freedom and tolerance, we're much better than we used to be, but it can unravel pretty quickly. And the one thing that was encouraging about the aftermath of that event is that everyone really rallied around the Jewish community and of all, you know, including Muslim, you know, mosques and churches. That, I think, distinguished it a little bit from what might have happened 100 years earlier. That was the positive part of what happened there. But it's a reminder that in the modern age with social media and sort of easy access to guns, that even a small number of people who are, you know, full of hatred for religion can do so much harm.
Are there people other than presidents of the United States, I'm talking about regular, normal, everyday Americans, who have also pushed the cause of religious freedom throughout our history, Stephen Waldman?
Yes, and in some ways I would say they were even more important, because they're just incredible courage. Like, there's a woman named Mary Dyer who I sort of feel like every school child should learn about. She was a Quaker in Massachusetts in the Puritan era, and at the time being a Quaker was a crime. She knew that, and they said, if you keep coming back here, we're going to execute you. And yet two of her friends were executed, and she kept returning anyway because she thought the law was so obscene, and she used a form of civil disobedience. She came back, and they did, in fact, arrest her and take her to Boston Commons, and they hung her from a tree and killed her. She knew what she was doing, but she wanted to challenge the law, and she believed that, you know, her freedom and that the path she had chosen was the right one. There were children throughout the story that kind of blow me away. Like, there were a lot of Catholic school children there was a period in the 19th century when there was a big fight over what Bible would be read in the public schools. So basically, Protestant Bible, meaning the King James translation, was taught in the public schools, and the Catholics started to object to this. That we have a different translation that we prefer, and also a different Ten Commandments than the Protestants used. And the Protestants insisted, no, the King James Bible is the Bible. That's the one we're going to be using. And there were riots, and there were in Philadelphia was one of the biggest ones. There were 30 people died in a riot there over the teaching of the Bible in the public schools. And then you had these school children, like in Boston, who were told to read the Protestant Bible. They refused, and they were punished and expelled. But then they kept coming back and doing it over again. So it was things like that that really advanced the cause forward. And there's a lot of brutal persecution, but it often led to progress afterwards. So it was quite a slow process, really, and needed tremendous bravery on the part of Americans, and ultimately a little bit of a kind of all for one, one for all attitude among different religious minorities, that like, you can't just fight for your own. You have to fight for the principle that everyone should have religious freedom. It was only really once people started to embrace that idea that we really had legitimate, strong religious freedom.
Our time begins to run short. One final question, though, Stephen Waldman. Some people believe that religious freedom is under threat in the United States today. Is that true? And if so, how so?
I think there are some really worrisome signs. And the number one thing is the attack on American Muslims, which in the last, you know, 5 or 10 years has kind of crossed a line from being about Islamic terrorism to a broad brush attack on Muslims, communities trying to block the construction of mosques. There was a poll that said only half of Republicans were willing to say that Islam should be legal in America. So that gives you a sign of how much the consensus has unraveled. So that could be really dangerous. And there's also a little bit of a tendency now to kind of politicize religious freedom, just to use it as a club against your opponents, to generate votes or TV ratings or things like that. And that is unfortunate because it kind of diminishes it. It makes it smaller and less serious.
Many other topics discussed in Stephen Waldman's book, for example, how the phrase under God got inserted into the Pledge of Allegiance. Mm-hmm. Lots of other stuff, too. The title of the book is Sacred Liberty, America's Long, Bloody, and Ongoing Struggle for Religious Freedom. Stephen Waldman, our guest, the author of that book. Stephen, nice to meet you. Nice to have you with us for a few minutes here today, sir.
Thank you so much for having me. I really appreciate it.
Sure. So long now. The Young Funeral Home of Butler invites you to stop by their Jefferson Street location, downtown Butler, to talk about pre-arrangements. Not the easiest thing to do, but necessary. And the Young family will walk you through the process, making it very comfortable and really easy to take care of. You'll experience peace of mind knowing that your wishes and plans will be carried out to the last detail. Call the Young Funeral Home in Butler today to make an appointment with a member of the Young family. Generations of the Young family have been caring for generations of Butler families for well over 40 years. The Young Funeral Home, West Jefferson Street in Butler.
Here's what's coming up next. Greatest Hits USA.
Hi, this is Chuck Taylor from Greatest Hits USA. Coming up this weekend, we're going to answer the following questions. Who bought plane tickets with a stolen credit card? What group was named after a magazine? And who had the number one record this week in 1975? Turn it up this weekend for Greatest Hits USA, right here.
Tune in every Saturday right after the news at noon here on WISR 680.
Greatest Hits USA.
You'll do it right to grow the best garden you can. Lowe's does it right, too, with savings on Miracle-Gro potting mix with fertilizer to help you get growing. And grow plants twice as big versus unfed plants. Pick up a 50-quart bag now for just $10. Plus, get Bonnie 2.32-quart vegetables and herbs, 3 for $10. For a garden that's worthy of showing off, do it right for less. Start with Lowe's. Offers valid through 6/5 while supplies last, U.S. only, excludes Alaska and Hawaii.
Now through Sunday, it's the JCPenney Summerific Sale, and these deals are hotter than hot. Get 50% off select shorts and tops for the whole family, and up to 50% off select home items, from curtains to bedding and bath. Plus, save even more with your 20% off coupon waiting for you in the JCPenney app wallet. For savings that sizzle, shop the Summerific Sale at JCPenney. Offers valid 5/28 to 6/2. Exclusions apply. See store or jcp.com for details.
And he drives it through the middle, base hit. Frazier's going to score, and the Pirates have the lead in the 10th.
Hey, Pirates fans, the Buccos play right here on WISR 680 AM. Pirates baseball is brought to you in part by the Visiting Nurses Association, Thrower Concrete, Cash Dollar and Associates, Cunningham Shaner, Butler Smiles Dental Care, Schneider's 1 Hour Heating and Air Conditioning, and Dr. Steven Henneberger. The big games, the big hits, the big pitches are going to be heard right here all season long on your hometown radio station, WISR 680 AM.
Thanks for joining us for today's edition of It's Your Turn with Dave Malarkey here on WISR 680 AM. Today's broadcast is also archived for you online at WISR680.com. Tune in again next time for Dave Malarkey's It's Your Turn, weekdays from 12:30 to 1:30, right here on WISR 680.
Little surfer, little one, make